When you ask why we're interested in history, I have to tell you, it's because of our Christian faith. We just feel responsible for certain things to be carried on in our culture. Daryl and I feel that it is our obligation to take care of it.
You know, I'm a restoration guy. Give me anything to restore and I'll figure out how to restore it. My quick story is, you know, I was raised in California and moved all over the state, lived in 5 or 6 different little towns, and was fortunate enough to live up near Coloma, where gold was discovered, and hike all those areas and see some of those mountain men and the cabins and what have you, and then move to a different place and learn the history there. When you come to Southern California, you realize that at some point, it's going to be solid freeways and houses everywhere. And I saw that happen in the San Gabriel Valley. And when I came here, I said, wow, we've got actual history here. We've got buildings, we've got roads. Some of it needs to be preserved before it gets mowed over. And of course, it has been mowed over, but we've been able to preserve our little area. But we've maintained the old buildings there and saved a number of them. Yeah, it was kind of a last ditch effort. It's like, gotta save what's still here.
First of all, would you guys give me an explanation of the Vail Restoration Project, how you got started and what it is? Why was that so important to preserve?
So when we moved to Temecula, one of the things that I would do, I would take people out to the Vail Ranch headquarters site because it was the dominant influencer in this community from 1906 to 1965. And it still had an adobe, and it still had like 5 or 6 old barns and so forth. And there had been a county administrator that had been trying to save it, make some acreage out of it, and make some sort of a place to go. And the county budget went to heck, and she was let go, and the project was let go. But she kind of started a little seed. And then, Rebecca, I'll let you take it from there.
Okay. So in early 1996, there was a letter to the editor of our newspaper that said, these ranch buildings are probably filled with junta virus and they should be torn down. They're a blight to our community. And Daryl and I knew that the site contained part of the Butterfield Stagecoach Trail. It was where the Mormon Battalion had come through. It was the road, the old road. So the Mormon Battalion had walked on it. It was the second post office for Temecula. It was the town of Temecula before there was an old town, which started 20 years later. And it was the center of all commerce in the area. And it just didn't seem right to us that all those layers of history should be obliterated. So we responded to the letter to the editor and said all of those facts and more, you know, of the significance of that site. And after our letter was published, we were contacted by someone and he said, there's a group of about 6 or 8 of us who are meeting once a month, and we're trying to come up with a plan to save these buildings. So he invited us to join with them. Well, it was a couple of months later that things came to a head, and that was because one of the small adobe portions of a historic building was to be torn down. And I contacted a member of the Vail family. The Vails owned 4 Mexican land grants in the Temecula Valley, 87,500 acres. So they dominated the entire valley with their cattle grazing empire. And he said, you know, that building that they tore down, that was built in 1922. It certainly is historic. So I called the developer. I said, don't tear that down. It's historic. And he laughed at me and said it was 1957. Very conveniently, didn't qualify at that time then as historic. And the next day he went out, dug a hole in the ground, bulldozed the adobe portion and covered it over with dirt. And 3 days later, Daryl and another gentleman filed a lawsuit against this multimillionaire developer of San Diego County and the county of Riverside for issuing him a permit to do the demolition. So our lawsuit, and I say ours because although I was not a plaintiff, there were four principal people involved in this lawsuit. One was an archaeologist who had done previous historic lawsuits. And then Daryl's partner, Dick Diamond, was a high school history teacher, Daryl, a hairstylist, and me, an ophthalmology tech. And the four of us put together a lawsuit without any legal assistance. We did it on our own, and it was challenging, but it was a passion. It was like God nudging us. We had to do this. Nobody else was raising their hands. And what was really interesting too is that everybody else who had been meeting together kind of backed off. It was like this lawsuit thing. Oh, I don't know if we want to be part of that. And so for 6 months, the four of us met together, strategized.
So along with the lawsuit, we also included a restraining order that didn't allow the developer to move a piece of equipment on the property, which didn't just include our little area, but it included a whole big, almost a mile long and a third of a mile wide area that he was trying to develop. One side of the river he was developing commercial. The other side, he was building houses.
I bet he loved that.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of had him by the, you know what? And so we didn't realize it at the time, but he was also behind in some infrastructure things that he was required to build, a couple of bridges and things like that, and behind in his taxes to the county. So the county wasn't getting their money. And so they kind of had their two cents that they were able to jump in. They kind of swung over to our side, and in the negotiation, they were sort of the mediators. And okay, Rebecca.
Our lawsuit lasted from March through November of 1998. And we didn't win, they didn't lose, or vice versa. We settled. In the meanwhile, we lost our fourth partner because she wanted us to be real hardcore and ask for 30 acres, but we were going to settle for four because the essential buildings could all be placed on a 4-acre lot. And we figured by being reasonable, we were more likely to receive what our true desire was, and that was to save the buildings and to acknowledge that property as a historic property. And it wasn't to us about winning, it was about our goal of historic preservation for the community. So we lost her, and the three of us proceeded, and we had terms of the settlement, which included all the structures to be renovated. I was going to say rebuilt, but renovated is a better word. Some of them had to be moved onto the 4-acre site because they were just out of it. So on those buildings, every board had to be disassembled, numbered, moved, and reassembled. And some of that didn't happen until 4 years later, and it came together beautifully. So so we gave permission to work in a reasonable way on the site to recreate the historic village feel. Another stipulation was that the site would be nominated for a National Historic Register status. And by the way, we just last week sent in the final edits on that. So it's been a long time coming. So from 1998 until now. And we're hoping that the hearing on that at the state level will be late September. So then I guess it's pretty much a slam dunk if the state agrees to the nomination that it just breezes right through the national level to become a historic recognized site.
I'd like to interrupt here. Okay, so we did lose one barn. It was an implement barn. It didn't have a floor, and you would drive a piece of equipment, drop it off, and unhook your tractor or your horses and drive off. So we lost that barn, but they did allow us to keep all the material. So once everything was settled, and I'm going to jump forward a couple of years, a new developer came in and bought that portion of the shopping center. And he was a historian. He loved history. And we put on a presentation to his company to let them know what we were all about and what they were working with. And he came to us and he said, you know, there's a little piece of property on the front of the shopping center that there doesn't seem to be any use for. He says, we'd like to build something there. I says, how about rebuilding that barn that torn down? So it's a replica, exact size, but it has doors on the openings and so on. And that is the History Center where you had your event. So that was a second part of our situation. It came later.
That's really good to have that little tidbit, because you had explained about that barn and what it looked like and how it was so similar to the original, but you didn't share the backstory of how it came to be. So that's great to have
that. Right. And that building has some original veil tin on it, on the roof. Yeah. And inside the room where we ate dinner that first night, the paneling on the walls is from that original building that was torn down. So that's kind of special too.
This is great to have you retell this story, because this is one of the things that really struck me when we first met you and I heard this. All these things, you were right in the middle of all of this, all these things, just fighting with everything you had to keep your history. So now look at where you've come. You're
yes.
on the way to national historic status. So that's great.
Which is kind of interesting, because, you know, we've talked for years and years and years about getting the Mormon Battalion Trail recognized as a national historic trail. And, you know, everybody wants to throw roadblocks in the way. And
yeah.
You guys, you overcame.
Yep.
That's great.
Well, you may also want to know that the Butterfield Stagecoach route is being nominated as a historic trail. And it would be nice if you could put an addendum in there for the part that was walked by the Mormon Battalion, because I know they followed the trail for part of it. So it would be nice if you could just add that as a layer to the historic designation, if possible.
That would be nice.
Yeah. Well, that is great. I feel like I know better why the Vail Ranch was so important to preserve and how it came about. So thank you.
Following that little thread of conversation, in 2019, the Vail Ranch Restoration Association recognized that our three main men were aging out, and that our goal had been accomplished, because in 2016, the Vail headquarters opened for perusal and, you know, shops and events and so on. And our historical society that we also were founding members of, because our goal of restoring the Vail headquarters had been accomplished, we were duplicating in the two organizations, mm-hmm. the Historical Society and Vail Ranch Restoration Association. So for all of those three reasons, we decided to merge. It made more sense to just streamline it to one. And of course, you know, we're board members and program directors and whatever, you know, a past president and vice president and so on of the Historical Society too. Mainly the same people, we just had two different sets of goals. So now the Historical Society is watching over Vail headquarters, and the Little Temecula History Center is the proper name of the Red Barn, Little Temecula History Center. It is now under the auspices of the Temecula Valley Historical Society.
Are there any other perspectives or thoughts that you may want to share with us
You know, I was thinking about this before we started talking today, and I don't remember if we mentioned in our first Zoom gathering that there was a book written by someone, a historian in Temecula, called The Temecula Massacre. And it was written by Horace Parker. It's a little red covered book. And I can't find my red covered book, but I have a copy of his manuscript here. And I reviewed it before we started talking today. And this is how I first became familiar with the story. And it's such a dramatic story that the prophet had said there would be no one lost to battle on the journey. And there was no one lost in battle. But when the people came, when the battalion came to the hills just east of Temecula, on their way to Temecula, they saw what looked like the aftermath of a battle, and they prepared to raise their arms to fight because they thought it was the Mexican-American War. And then as they got closer, they realized these were not Mexican people, but it was an Indian to Indian skirmish. And at that moment, you know, it is what happened that I had described earlier, that the two different people groups encountered each other. But it was Horace Parker's book that first acquainted us with the story. And we actually quoted from that and told about the Mormon Battalion in our lawsuit. That was part of our case in saving the Vail headquarters, is that we knew that that was a significant historic fact, that the Mormon Battalion had walked through our property just after burying the people. And the graveyard is only like two blocks away from the Vail headquarters.
We've been digging into original documents that haven't been looked at in a very long time. I don't remember who wrote this, but one of the guys was very specific in his history that it really was close to a skirmish with the tribe before they realized what the situation was. But
yes.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you was, since you became more aware of the Mormon Battalion Trail and the Mormon Battalion story, how has that impacted you? If you had to describe your experience with the Mormon Battalion in one word, what word would that be and why?
My word would be amazing.
Well, yeah, it was historic, you know, to know that the president had of the United States had encouraged it and financed some of it, and that the Mormons were willing to actually do it. I think they weren't real thrilled about it. They didn't necessarily like America at that time. You know, they'd been kind of tossed around and kicked out and shunned and so on. So it was fascinating.
One of the things that really stuck out was you said after 2 weeks on the trail, your straw hat broke. It just brings home the stress of what people went through to get to California. You know, you you think, well, sure, their shoes are going to wear out, but you certainly don't think their straw hat's going to fall apart. That you brought home that difficulty.
You know, we really honor the Mormon Battalion history, and actually the Mormon Church history. We're not LDS ourselves, but we recognize the sincerity and the tenacity. And the Mormon Battalion itself, their entire story is just so compelling. All the hardship that their diaries talk about as they came along the way. And okay, then it was suddenly over after they arrived in Temecula. And what did they do from there? It's all a great, great story. And it's kind of a metaphor of our lives. You know, think about the three little pigs, and they set out to find their fame and fortune. And all of our, you know, culture has a kind of a metaphor like that. And it's a hard way to pass through life. But if we can give people stories and tell them what's happened to people who've gone before us, it gives hope and it gives encouragement.
Daryl was saying that he didn't know much about the Mormon Battalion originally. And that was one of my questions after we came through and had the event, and you've done the research that you have and have had more exposure to it. What do you think is the situation with your community? Do they know a little bit more?
Well, I certainly do.
As far as the locals, you know, there are some people who are interested in history and others aren't.
Right.
So I'm so amazed, even with LDS people, yeah, they know the words Mormon Battalion, but there isn't this desire to know all about it. And I don't get it. I want to shake people, you know, either people involved in local history or people who the church history, you know, it's like, hey, don't you want to know? Can I just talk at you? You know,
we have a mythical jar. And every time we strike up a conversation with somebody about history that wasn't particularly interested, or we are required to put a quarter in that mythical jar.
You know, some people have a swear jar, a cuss word jar. Yeah. We don't have any coins in that one, but we have overflowing in our tell people about history when they don't really care.
Well, with people like you who have become aware and are trying to help educate people and make them aware of what the battalion did, I think we're making progress. Baby steps, right? That's what I kept telling myself, one step at a time. I would start one day, and of course Kevin would navigate by the landmarks that we could see. And I remember in New Mexico, starting out is Wagon Mound in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So in New Mexico, when you start out towards Wagon Mound, and Wagon Mound looks so far away. And every day we just keep walking, and before you know it, we were there. And I think that's what I'm hearing from you folks. You just took that one step, letter to the editor, contacting the owner of the Bell Ranch, then putting your lawsuit into effect. Baby steps, right? And now look, you've preserved history. And we, when we were in Kansas, we heard a story of a man who had really deep Santa Fe Trail ruts in his on his property.
To set that up, this was right at one of the major crossings. And so these ruts were coming down this hill. And the guy was a cattle rancher and raised cattle for feedlot. So anyway, his wife was an amateur historian and was very excited about having these ruts on their property. And anyway, a few years after she found that out, they were in the process of enlarging their project. And the husband decided that the place to put the expanded property feedlots were right across the ruts.
Mm.
And the wife was not happy about it and told him so. Anyway, he went ahead.
Wow.
It's very touching to me to see people like you who love what they have and are trying to preserve it. I know we can't preserve every single thing, but if there weren't people like you fighting for something, there would be nothing.
Ooh,
thank you.
Eloquent there.
And for people reenacting history like yourselves, you know, that really gives a lot too. We appreciate that.
And isn't it interesting? You know, there's this dance between academics and reenactors and living history people who one group tends to poo-poo the other, and amateurs versus academics with degrees, and of course the pressure to publish versus I do this every weekend, I dress up and you know do cosplay of historians, and yet it's the interaction between the two and the sharing of different aspects that is so critical to really understand what you're looking at. I can read the battalion stories all day long, but until you get out on the trail and you see what they're seeing, and there were times when literally it would click. And I was in 1846. I was seeing with their eyes and understanding why you walk on a ridgeline, why you do this, why you do that.
Right.
So much still that I'm ignorant of.
That's great. You know, with the academics, they will only reach a few people, but the reenactors reach so many more. And the stories that reenactors give inspire the people who they reach. So we are big on the reenacting, the value of reenacting.
It would be nice if we could improve the relationship between the two groups.
That's one of the things that we're hoping happens through these podcasts, not only just to reconnect, to remember what we experienced and the people around us experienced, but as people listen to your stories and these other people that we've visited with, we're hoping that there'll be a little spark of interest in, hey, you know, I love history too. Look at what these people did for their areas and how they're preserving and sharing history. And hopefully we can get some younger generation interested in doing the same.
You know, one of our missions has always been to teach younger people. And we provide local history curriculum for third grade students in the Temecula Unified School District and to other private schools in the area and to homeschool children. We set up learning stations, both at Vail headquarters and also at the Little Temecula History Center. They do things like you demonstrated that day, washing clothes the old fashioned way on a scrub board, cooking over an open fire. We show the chuck wagon, the stagecoach, they get a ride in the stagecoach and so on. We integrate the hands-on with the stories that we tell about the past and help them to be proud. Again, it's something about knowing your history. And then these kids, Daryl has always said, it's their hometown. They need to have pride in their hometown. Some of these kids come from families that they can't be proud of. Well, Temecula is a good town, so most of them can be proud of it. But you know, there's the occasional student who comes from a home that's very dysfunctional. And if you can give them at least be proud of your hometown, that goes a long way to their well-being. And then we've had some come back after their third grade tours. And then finally, they're a junior or senior in high school, need to have credits for community service, and they come and serve us. And it's wonderful to see them again and see that they remember and value what we've given them.
We started this whole adventure by going and doing a living history event here in Bay City. It was interesting yesterday as we were driving back from Pennsylvania, we were talking to one of the young boys who started, he must have been 10 when he started coming to our encampments here at the reenactment. And now he's a young father that has two little kids, and he was asking Kevin, you know, is there a group that reenacts here out in this area where I live? And it's just stuck with him. And it does that every time we come in contact with the kids that interacted with us and participated in that event. Awesome. It's instilled a love of history.
Well, I think we've got everything. Plus, this has just been amazing. Thanks for letting us visit with you and reconnect and reminisce and just once again feel of your great spirit and love for history. So thank you both. Yes,
yeah. We thank you for your friendship. It was just really, really wonderful to meet you both and instantly bond with you. And I just want to say heart, love you.
So everyone go to the Little Temecula History Center and visit. Uh-huh. And have a great experience and learn more of their great history.
I hope all of you will take a chance to stop by the Vail headquarters if you're ever in Temecula. Visit with Daryl and Rebecca and enjoy and benefit from all the hard work that they and their friends have done in terms of being able to provide you a great opportunity to learn more about Temecula history. In the description of this podcast, there's also a link to a YouTube video, and you can actually have Rebecca take you on a virtual tour of the Vail headquarters.